It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller.
Hey, Paul, good to be with you in studio here today. I'm Doug Gefeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, we have a fascinating topic and a wonderful guest today. Our topic is human trafficking. It's everybody's business.
Whoa.
And our guest is Brenda Wells, who is the founder and director of I5 Freedom Network, a corporate response to end human trafficking. And we'll get into all of that in just a second. But Brenda, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's I'm fascinated to have you. I had the opportunity to run into Brenda at the Orange County Speakers Networking Meeting, like so many of our past guests, and I really appreciate you coming up and explaining to me what you did and what you do. This is one of those topics. I know nothing about it. You gave me a two-second synopsis, and I thought I needed to learn more about this. So
yeah, it's a dubious pleasure to be able to come here and talk to you about this. I mean, it's clearly a difficult topic, but it's one not many people know about it. So the opportunity to share the word is what I do. We are in the awareness component of spreading opportunities to fight in human trafficking.
Okay. Before we get into that, let's find out a little bit about you. Tell us about what you do when you're not involved in this business.
I'm a corporate trainer with Dale Carnegie, and so I work with them using all of their fabulous techniques and tools to reach businesses on human relationship development for all kinds of different business scenarios. I also have three kids, teenagers, two going to college and one in high school. And then my husband is a helicopter pilot currently in Afghanistan.
Ooh, I hope he's doing well.
He is, yeah.
Is he scheduled to come home soon?
He'll be home this month, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful. And she says that with a great big smile.
Yeah. It's been a long trip.
Oh, well. How does your work with Dale Carnegie relate to what you're doing now? Did it have anything to do with getting into this project?
Only incidentally. So when I started pursuing work with Dale Carnegie is about the same time I started pursuing how to get engaged in the fight against human trafficking. And my nonprofit, the I5 Freedom Network, is ostensibly a training organization. And so what I've learned through Dale Carnegie and the training that I do there definitely translates well to the training I do with the nonprofit. We engage businesses on how to identify and report human trafficking, both labor and sex trafficking, as it may occur in their particular sector of business.
Okay, so that's how you got into it. And you know, just before we leave that topic, Dale Carnegie, I mean, come on. That book has been around for so long, and it's still relevant?
Yeah, it is still relevant, and it's actually over 115 years old as a program.
Yeah.
And it's still going strong. They've rebranded a lot of their language and their tools for the corporate audience, and a lot of language and things we do are all for that.
Well, look, it's wonderful to have you here. And one last question before we get into today's topic, and we ask all of our guests this. What's your guiding principle?
You must do something.
You must do. Oh, I can see that fits in well.
Yeah. So in terms of both of those things, it's about trying to make a difference in people's lives one way or the other. I think the common denominator between the Dale Carnegie and the I5 Freedom Network is my passion or interest in engaging people in an educational sort of environment. And to get the part of the aha moment and be a part of that is exciting and a value for me.
All right. So let's just jump right in. Give us a little thumbnail of what, when we say human trafficking, what are we talking about? What is the issue?
Well, it's a global problem. It's the fastest growing global illicit crime. If it hasn't taken over drugs, it's about to. It's already exceeded illegal arms trade as far as a global illicit industry. It makes about $150 billion a year. That number comes from the International Labor Organization. And for perspective, that's more than Nike, Amazon, eBay, Starbucks combined.
So it is a big business.
It is a big business. And it's easy to do it because it's a very high reward, low risk crime. It's really hard to detect human trafficking because we just perceive it as something that it's not. And also with labor trafficking, it's very difficult to find. About half of the problem is labor trafficking, but those particular victims and scenarios are behind closed doors, so they're a lot harder to see. Our organization, the I-5, we focus solely on domestic. So everything that we talk about is all about domestic human trafficking, meaning in the U.S. The statistic that gets a lot of people a little blown away is the fact that California is the number one state in the nation for the highest number of reported human trafficking cases.
Not a place we want to be.
No, it's not something we'd like to claim. And a lot of that is, could it be because we're becoming more aware and we're reporting more? You know, that's not necessarily a bad outcome, but we continue to have the highest number of child exploitation cases. According to the FBI, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego are three of the top 10 cities, according to the FBI, with the highest child exploitation in sex trafficking.
Okay, so this is, when you first mentioned it to me, my mind immediately went to the fact that, well, this is an international problem, it isn't a local problem. And you quickly, with those statistics, kind of blew me away and said, no, you've missed the point here, Doug.
Yeah. And just to bring it even closer, Orange County is one of the number one sex tourism destinations in the nation. In fact, worldwide. And a lot of it has to do with the Anaheim resort area, where there's a lot of business conventions and sporting events, because sporting events is a opportunity for a lot of sex trafficking to take place.
Okay, I'm totally ignorant of this. When you talk about sex tourism, what are we talking about there?
It means people are coming here away from their home in hopes to get a date or engage in prostitution through you know, pimps and online advertising services. And they come here, so they're away from home. So they're not living here. They're just engaging in it here.
Okay. And in terms of definition, you mentioned sex trafficking, and then you mentioned labor trafficking. I don't know what that...
Labor trafficking takes place in the terms of, this is where it's primarily a foreign issue, but happening in the U.S., where false employment agencies will go overseas, and they'll particularly prey on companies or countries, rather, that have had a disaster, and there's a lot of people, a lot of poverty, and they're looking for work, and they'll promise them jobs here in America in a restaurant or hotel, something in the hospitality industry, and they will bring them here, and then they will confiscate their papers and withhold their earnings, and oftentimes they will also threaten their safety or their family safety back home, which is what keeps them in place. They're also labor trafficking more than sex trafficking. They are controlled physically in terms of where they're held in place. Yeah.
Okay. That's the one that I probably see more of on evening television and programs. But frankly, the sex trafficking, it's sort of a hidden underground sort of issue, isn't it?
Well, it is only if you're not looking for it, you know.
Guilty.
Yeah. A lot of what we think of in terms of sex trafficking, we are putting in our normal mindset or picture of prostitution. And really the current model for prostitution is really trafficking. If there is an individual out there who is, you know, using their body to make money on their own, and they're choosing their clients, and they're keeping their money, well, that's prostitution, and that's different from what we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Prostitution is still illegal, but just like in the open market, the smaller businesses quickly get taken over by the larger organizations, and in this particular case, we're talking about pimps who will quickly conquer any individual, and there's actually a lot of competition. They have a very strategic and unwritten business model that works within that culture. So there's how they get their girls and their boys, and how they work the streets, and how they advertise online is all based on a culture of awareness and understanding that exists within them. And the individual prostitute no longer stands a chance. She'll probably be bullied out or forced out or sucked in.
But you say that we're not talking about prostitution, we're talking about trafficking.
We're talking about forced prostitution.
Okay.
So these are primarily girls, but boys are a big part of the problem, a big part of the large victim population too. but they're being forced to engage in prostitution. They don't get to choose who their clients are, and they are keeping none of the money. And oftentimes, more often than not, there's a lot of physical and emotional and psychological abuse involved in the relationship.
So can you sort of tell us, do you have any stories or examples of the trafficking so we know exactly what we're talking about here?
Yeah, here's one a lot of people can relate to. And one of the things that's happening is that gangs are switching their commodity from drugs and guns to humans because it's not illegal to have a girl in your car. Of course, it's illegal to have drugs and, guns in your car. So that's a lot easier for them to get away with having a girl that they're controlling in their vehicle, for example. But so there's a recently in Oceanside, I think it was the case was brought up in 2012, but only finalized in 2014 or 2015. But it was a gang enterprise. They called themselves the Enterprise, and their motto was blue, red plus blue equals green.
Okay.
And so what that means is red plus blue rival gang colors.
All right.
Okay. So these are gangs who would sooner have shot each other than work together, but realize that if they came together and created a trafficking or a prostitution ring, they would make green money. So these two rival gangs came together, red plus blue, to form the Enterprise, which was money. And they were operating out of a hotel in Oceanside, right there by the pier there, out of a hotel. And in this particular case, the hotel owner was complicit in the activity. In exchange for cash payments and higher room rates, they would give this gang operation rooms out of the way and would alert them if police were coming and kind of shield them from exposure. The sad thing was that these kids, the girls that they were using, were being recruited right out of the high schools and the middle schools. And they were even going to school during the time that they were being trafficked.
So they're not confined and locked up and they're brainwashed basically into this?
Yeah, we think about, these girls being forced into, you see all these pictures about human trafficking, about girls in handcuffs and chains. It looks nothing like that. It's a lot of psychological warfare going on. And if you can imagine what conditions of domestic violence keep women and children from turning against their abusers.
Okay.
Very similar sense of connection and sense of family, as perverted as it is, exists here. And in this particular case, these girls that were being recruited and trafficked out of high schools, and they were still going to school each day, not each day, but they were still engaging in their schools, it was actually a teacher who noted something. She saw that all of a sudden these girls who were coming to school had much more expensive accessories and clothing and, were really just changing their attire. But they were also showing up with bruises and marks of abuse. And it was a teacher who tipped off the FBI, who then they started the investigation, and they were the ones who broke open this prostitution ring out of Oceanside.
Okay. All right. Well, that gives us a much clearer understanding of what we're talking about. It still is difficult for me. I've never been aware. I've never seen this. I haven't talked to anyone who's seen it.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to anyone who's been a victim of it. So it's sort of like, well, does this really go on? Is it really as big an issue as you're saying?
And the answer is yes. It is. And what's even scarier is a lot of the problems are happening, through the use of social media. And kids are being exploited and trafficked without ever leaving their bedroom and without ever meeting the person who's trafficking them. And the way that works... So the way that works, we'll use an example of online gaming, where kids are... these internet-connected games where players are connected with strangers on the internet through the gaming.
Sure, through teams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you don't really know who you're talking to, but what's interesting, and I found this from an actual gamer, that there's a real true sense of connection and team and trust that exists when you make online gaming friendships. They really feel like there's a family there. So there's an immediate sense of trust that exists. which is sad because although it can actually happen, there are definitely predators out there too. And so they will convince, they'll come in as representing as a girl probably to a teenage boy saying, through the gaming relationship, and start a relationship, connection and an interest, and send maybe send a picture or two of herself, a compromising picture, and say, hey, why don't you send one to me? And then when they do that, once or twice, fine, but when they decide that doesn't feel good and they don't want to do it anymore, then they get challenged and they say, if you don't do this, we'll send all your pictures to everyone you know on the gaming site. And then they use those pictures for porn. And then they keep reusing these images over and over again. So that's one way that it happens. And an actual story right here out of Orange County, I think was Lake Forest, there was a high school coach, his name was Zachary Reeder, who had made friends with all of his players on Facebook. And they all, and he created a spoof account, is what it's called when they anonymize an individual, of a young woman who made friends with all of the players.
Okay.
She did the same thing. She sent a few pictures of herself and said, hey, if you want more of me, send me something of you. And these boys all, in some manner or another, did that. And once they, again, tried to back out of it, the threat was, if you don't keep doing this, we're going to post these pictures everywhere on your social media page. And contrary to what we think of as the low-hanging fruit, you know, the foster care kids, the ones who are lonely and depressed.
Disadvantaged, yeah.
These were the elite. These were the kids whose status was actually now working against them because now they had a lot to lose. And the sad thing was, is not one of the students is the one who got them out of it. A mother came across an exchange that got her suspicious and looked into it, and that's what revealed this high school coach. I think he was indicted on, 36 counts of exploitation and pornography with these players.
Okay, so in this story, who's making money? How's somebody making money that entices them to keep doing this and develop this kind of program?
In this particular case, both of those cases, they're selling the images for pornography.
Okay, yeah. They can sell them.
Yeah, they can sell the images for pornography, or they're making movies, or they're doing something, and they're getting money in return for that. So that's an example where social media is a powerful tool that could be used for both good and evil. And in this case, it's really...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so sad. You know, I've done some coaching for an international gaming company. And as a result, I did a lot of research on it and found that the online gaming and the teams that are created has a lot of positive benefits of teaching people how to work in a team, how to be a leader, all kinds of good things.
Mm-hmm. I've heard people got married out of online gaming connections. So I know there's a lot of good things for sure, but it can be used ineffectively.
What is the, and as you pointed out, this is not limited to any particular economic group.
Mm-hmm.
It really can be from the bottom of the scale to the top of the scale. What about ethnic?
There's no rules about ethnicity at all. It is true about 70 to 80% of kids who are rescued out of the life, that's what it's called. It's called the life out of human trafficking. 70 to 80% have had some experience or exposure in the foster care system. So that is a predominant population within this problem.
Okay.
But they're not the only ones. As I mentioned, these kids who are being exploited, they were all suburban, happy, intact families. Another story that really tends to put the stereotype on its end is about this woman named Rachel Thomas. She's actually from Pasadena, and she was going to school in Atlanta to a really popular college area out there, and a gorgeous woman who was approached on the dance floor to become a model. And at first she said no, but then another girl came out and said, you really should give this guy a chance. He really knows what he's doing. And so she did look into it, and it was all legitimate. She made some music videos. It looked just like what you see on TV, all of the hair and the makeup and the activity and all that sort of stuff. And he hired her, and she went to work for him and started to see things not going quite as she suspected, started witnessing some violence and some other strange things that she knew that this was not actually a good scenario. And so she called, heard his name was Mike, she said, called Mike and said, hey, listen, I think I'm just going to focus on my studies for now. And he went and got a piece of paper, which was her employment contract that she signed. And he you know, made noise in the phone so she could hear that he had it. And he said something to the effect of, like, I know you have a little sister, and I know where she lives. I know where your parents are. If you don't come to work tomorrow, they're not safe.
Wow.
And she was, again, college-educated, intact family. Her mother was a lawyer, which is what gave her the sense of empowerment to go through the signing of these contracts without asking for help. Because, you know, she's a young adult. I don't need my parents' help. She wants
to
be independent.
We've all been there.
Yeah. And in this case, it was her, you know, embarrassment that she got into this scenario to begin with, plus the threat of the danger to her own family that kept her going back. And she endured this for 7 months before, again, she did not. And she was going to college. Her roommate had no idea.
Oh.
She was still going to class. Her parents had no idea. And it was one day she was at home and she saw a news report that had this guy's Mike, his name, and a picture on the news said, you know, if you know this guy, let us know. He's been arrested for, you know, charges on trafficking. And she said, like, something like 75 calls in the first hour.
Wow.
About him. And that's the only way she got out. She did not have the tools she needed. She was too afraid, you know, and that's fear.
Sure.
Is a huge part of the things that hold people in place. That's not physical, it's emotional.
Okay, there's a couple of places I would like to go with this. I'm going to let you direct me. I would like to know, as a parent, as a next-door neighbor, what are the things we should be looking for, if you can give us some tips there. And then also, I want to know, what does your organization do about this? What is its role there? Before we get into either one of those, let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be right back to this.
Okay.
All right.
Do you have a desire to be a part of a conscious community? I mean a community of people who get together with the purpose of strengthening their awareness muscles, deepening their relationships, and striving for the extraordinary? Check out how to get started at productivelearning.com. We are a unique self-development company, and we believe that we all have the innate ability to create and live the lives we truly want. But we also know that ability needs to be nurtured and developed. That's why we offer over 40 different workshops to our conscious community. Workshops that intentionally stretch you beyond your comfort zone towards what you truly want. Our workshops are not ordinary. We take journeys across the world, from exotic scuba diving trips to rich cultural getaways. And we offer amazing workshops right here in South Orange County. Join us and find out just how extraordinary life can be. Go to productivelearning.com today or call Lisa Reed at 949-234-0628. To see how you can be a part of our conscious community, that's productivelearning.com or 949-234-0628.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
And we're back in the studio here, and we've got Brenda Wells with us, who is the founder director of I-5 Freedom Network, and we're talking about human trafficking. I was just telling Brenda during our break here, this is a tough interview for me. This is not a pleasant subject, and I was sharing with her in the green room before that as I've talked to people about this over the weeks getting ready for this interview, they sort of had two reactions. One was, oh my gosh, I didn't realize we had that problem here. And the other reaction was, I'm not sure I want to talk about this. It's so awkward. Do you get that a lot?
Yeah, it's definitely a cocktail party killer, this conversation. I try not to bring it up too much when, you know, unless really pressed. But yes, absolutely. When people, one of the biggest challenges of this cause is getting people to believe me when I say it's happening right here. I think you said one of the statements I made that got your attention is it's so close, it's in our backyard, it's in our driveway too.
I keep repeating that one because it just stuck with me. In my driveway kind of felt a little invasive.
And it's true. You know, one of the places we'll probably come in contact with most probably is traveling sales crews. Those people come right to your front door. We'll get to that later if you want to get into that one. But that's a real common labor exploitation problem among American youth that we'll see at our front door. But aside from that, what you talked about, how it's a difficult conversation for people to have. And the reason why is a lot of people have empathy. And the first place they can think of is, you know, the awfulness for the victim and what they're going through. And definitely that empathy is a motivator to really believe and want to do something about it. But it can also be a place we get stuck. and not want to go any further. My response to that is like, well, back it up a couple steps and think about the people who are doing this to her, both the traffickers and the purchasers. And purchasers, when I say that, is a common term for John. And we're trying to change the language in this industry, you know, in the work that I'm doing, because John is a name to give anonymity. And frankly, the purchasers don't rate it.
Okay.
There's no reason why they get to be anonymous in this. And I have a father-in-law, and his name is John. And I think he's a great guy.
We're going to change the name.
So we use purchasers for that. So we think about who these people are doing it, who are actually seeking young people, who are going to these online. Backpage.com is a place where these kinds of things can be found, and they're actually seeking young girls. They're asking for 12 years old, or they're asking for a 12-year-old to look like a 9-year-old. I mean, they really are pressing the limits of our ability to manage this information, for sure.
And you know, you talk about this happening on the internet. I have to just share with you, as I was preparing the newsletter to go out announcing that you were going to speak today, I got all set to publish it, and I use Eye Contact, and Eye Contact says, we're probably not going to be able to send that because it's not passing our spam controls because of the word sex in there. I mean, I had to rework some of the stuff to just get in. How ridiculous. And then we get on the internet and we've got everything in the world.
Yeah, for sure. It's really easy. You can buy a person just like that on the internet.
So one of the questions before the break I asked you was, all right, I'm nervous about this. How do I identify, how do I see this happening? What are the tips that I need to know as a father, as a grandfather, as a neighbor? What do I look for?
Well, it's tricky because some of the signs and indicators are obvious. As a child, as a grandparent or a parent, you would start to notice mood changes in your kid, withholding, spending more time in their room, those kinds of things that we would think of maybe just chalking it up to, well, it's adolescence, or they're in a bad mood, or they're not having getting along with their friends. And those could be all the answers that they're giving you, but it could be something much, much more. As parents, we all want to respect our teens' privacy. We want to make sure we have a good connection and relationship with them. So we don't always press getting that information and really seeing how they're doing. As a parent, it's our role and our responsibility to really know what they're doing online. I never suggest abandoning it altogether, because we will lose our kids. You know, we have to let them know that we understand this is a part of their landscape now. It just is. Learning how to be safe by certain controls. But aside from that, back to your question. So just a change in mood, a change in behavior, markings, change in clothing, those kinds of things that you might notice. Talking a lot about a person that you've never met before, really getting hyper-focused on a particular relationship is a bit red flag in terms of an online person. Then in terms of a neighbor, you know, that's interesting too. You probably see same thing in the kids if they're being exploited for sex trafficking, but domestic exploitation in terms of labor trafficking is something we'll see here. A big case a couple years ago, Shaima Hall was pretty well known. She was bought in Egypt, sold to an Egyptian family by her parents, and brought over here and lived in a gated community in Irvine, and lived there for several years. There's three children in the house that belonged to the parents and then Shaima, and she was treated, you know, she was a slave. She was kept in horrible conditions, living in the garage, having to do all the work from beginning of the day till the end of the day, and clearly not getting paid and enduring all kinds of mistreatment. It was a neighbor who noticed the problem. So the neighbor saw that there was four kids in the house, but only three of them went to school. One of them was always there. She never left the front door, the kind of the confines of the house, mm-hmm. except to take the garbage out. Never made eye contact. Definitely had a sense of fear and withholdingness about her. So that's what it would look like there. And in fact, just I think last month there was a story about a Chinese woman who was actually 52, who was brought over from a family in China and now was here with the family in, I think it was Wisconsin, a really well-known community or well-to-do community in Wisconsin. And the police found this 52-year-old Chinese woman wandering around outside the streets. And when they got to the bottom of her story, it was horrific. It was horrific. They beat her. They ripped her hair out. They she had to do everything. They kept her money. She went from 80 pounds to, I'm sorry, from 120 pounds to 80 pounds in 2 months.
Oh.
And that's an example of labor exploitation, labor trafficking here in the U.S. And that's a really common, not really common, but it's probably the most common domestic servitude type scenario you'd see.
Okay, I want to be careful here because those are the kind of sensational stories we hear. Mm-hmm. We see them on the news, we read them in the paper. And what really struck me in our conversations before the show is, yeah, Doug, those things go on, but we've got things happening of a more routine, more involved, things that are not an exception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's probably the most, when people think about this problem, their mind goes straight to prostitution and young girls, and that is going to be the preponderance of the visual problem, what we're going to see. And it's easy for us to envision because we know what, we can envision what a prostitute, especially a girl prostitute, looks like.
Sure.
Inappropriate dress, over made up, all kinds of things like that. The challenge with the problem is that a lot of times these girls and boys don't identify themselves as a victim. They either blame themselves or they think they're doing this willingly. And, you know, the psychologists and the social workers and everyone will tell you, just like domestic violence, they don't have control and they're really being abused. And, you know, the criteria is force, fraud, or coercion. If any of those things exist, then they have a case for trafficking. Now, unless you're a minor, then they only have to prove that you've been induced, suggested to do this. You don't have to prove anything else if they're a minor, so 17 or younger. And the current statistics are that most of these kids are being drawn into labor, sex trafficking between the ages of 12 and 14. Yeah. So that's a middle schooler. You know, that's...
You know, I like the correlation that you make with domestic abuse or violence. I mean, because we're all aware of, usually it's a woman, it could be a man, of situations in a marital environment where the one person is so subservient they're afraid to speak up and they're abused physically, mentally, whatever. And we can kind of relate to that. We don't think about that happening in this sexual trafficking environment, but you're saying it's the same thing.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways that it can happen, but some of the more common ways is through the boyfriend scenario. And malls are a recruiting zone for traffickers looking for new victims. And they will start out by, you know, saying, you're pretty, asking you to be a model, just like the Rachel Thomas story,
yeah.
And get them engaged and act like they're a boyfriend, and then these girls get hooked, and then the abuse changes, the relationship changes. And there's three kinds of pimps that we talk about. The Romeo pimp, which he starts out great and then turns on you. Two kinds of pimps. And then the gorilla pimp, the one who's just violent from the beginning. And a lot of these, like you said, with the domestic violence, sometimes they're there because they're afraid. They're afraid for their lives. They're afraid for their children's or their family's life. Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot here. A lot of times they stay because they're convinced that if they just do it right next time, they'll be treated differently, that they will be loved and they will be accepted and this mistreatment will stop. That's a really big part of the esteem and the longing and the need for family that a lot of these victims are looking for.
True psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to shift a little bit. Let's really get down to what your organization does. We've talked about the problem, the issue, how to identify it. What does your group do?
We seek opportunities to engage businesses as it would intersect in their particular industry, because every business is going to come across this problem one way or another. Hotels are the number one business that this could be helpful for, because not only does it, almost all of the trafficking dates, like, so they'll, a pimp will either, you know, rent a room and have a girl in there and cycle men
right
through there, or a man will rent a room and he'll call up for a date and then the pimp will bring her. So we want to teach the front desk people and the bellmen and the housekeepers and the management all on how that looks and what to do about it.
And your organization does that training?
We do that. We target the particular department, and we work with the management. What's really important for what we do is connect the staff associates from the very entry level employee all the way up to the C level, to make sure that there's trust and awareness and alignment in how they're going to internally manage these issues. Lots of times a if a manager doesn't think it's a problem, if somebody in the restaurant noticed some language or some things that they had just learned and they turn in the tip, if the manager doesn't do anything about it, well, that's the last time they're going to say anything.
Right.
So we really spent a lot of time developing the trust in the relationship between all of the levels in the business to make sure that every tip is managed respectfully and properly. And then give them the tools to report what's their right as an individual citizen and what's their responsibility as an employee.
So the opportunity here, and I'm sorry for interrupting you, but the opportunity here is if we have in our listening audience people in the hotel business, then they should be contacting your firm about providing training to make them more aware of when this may be going on in their locations.
Absolutely. So we working with the HR departments in terms of this being part of their safety programs or training programs that they have, this fits within that. So okay. That will be one place that we can engage. And also just with HR and then just general hotel safety and awareness. And hotels is one business, you know, working with malls is another place, fast food restaurants. The higher up in the corporate chain we go, the better, because then we can really then start working from the top down and get it to as many of their franchises or properties as possible.
Your role is a training role.
Mm-hmm.
And the clientele or the target for you to provide the training is really any business that is a gathering place where people may be exposed to this. Is that, would that be?
Yeah, more or less. So it might not be a gathering place, but it might roll across their doorstep. So, for example, a mall is a place where we'd like to train security so they know what it looks like when somebody looks like they're being recruited. So we give them the red flags there. So fast food restaurants, because just like the reason we call the I-5 Freedom Network is because these people are on the move. You know, they go up and down the I-5 corridor and they have to stop, they have to get gas, they have to eat, and then they stop for these appointments in the hotel, and that's the relevance of our name there. So thinking about a Denny's, they'll stop and they'll engage, they'll be ordering breakfast, lunch, or dinner. The opportunity there for a server to observe almost like a family dynamic with these people, and we give them, so there's language to listen to. If you see neck tattoos, you hear words that say daddy, but you clearly they're not related. One guy with several different girls of different ethnicities, these are all indicators. Giving them the tips to observe, because they have a totally different opportunity to observe than a bellman or front desk person at the hotel. So we really tailor our message to the audience we're listening to.
Beyond, now, you said that wasn't the only place. Beyond sort of gathering places, where else, what other businesses would you provide this training to?
Well, as I mentioned, the malls, fast food restaurants. We'd like to engage with commercial real estate, property managers, and fellow tenants, because there's a lot of commercial or illicit, what looks like a massage parlor, which could be a commercial brothel. Mm-hmm. That is actually sex trafficking. The phenomenon in that sort of world is that it's primarily an Asian market there. And some of the tip-offs are that if there's any neon lights in the window, that's a good chance that it's probably a sex operation there rather than a legitimate business. So what we would like to do is, so then we would like to not only engage the property managers so they know who they're renting to kind of not only appeal to, you know, the noble motive and these are not people you want to be doing business with, but also there's an ROI involved that if you have a business here and they get busted, now your business, your property now is tainted. And our whole goal is to get to these people so they can be protected before their reputation is harmed, before the business or the problem happens and the news comes and all of a sudden your PR is on overload.
Now, what if I'm running a manufacturing company? Would I be a candidate for you to provide training to?
Absolutely, because there's a lot of opportunities for labor trafficking exploitation, even within our own, especially in Southern California, there's a lot of, the Mexican immigration lot that gets labor trafficked. So you might hire some people through a temporary agency, like let's say you're going through a seasonal plus up of people, or you're hiring through an employment agency that you don't pay the employee directly, you could be paying the employment agency. The employment agency may be exploiting these people for labor and withholding their wages, charging them for things like gas and childcare and things that are not legitimate charges in the standard, you know, workman compensation or, you know, payment structure.
We're getting close to wrapping up here.
Okay.
Boy, this is
that
going
fast.
I want to give you a chance. I mean, we're not wrapping up this minute. I want to give you a chance to whatever you wanted to cover that I sort of directed you away from. What do you want to let the audience know? One, we have to let them know how to get a hold of you.
Yeah.
And the other is, what else do you want to talk about?
Well, as I mentioned, the hardest part of what I do is getting people to believe me that this is a real problem. And then the second part of the problem is even if they believe me, will they be ready to do something about it? And the primary resource we give people, there's the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, and this is the big message of the day. If you're listening and you want to do something, please write this number down and put it in your phone. It's 888-3737-888. And that's a resource call, the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. And besides using that number to call a tip, it can be anonymous or not. It's completely up to you. The website itself is a fabulous resource if you want to learn more.
Okay, now that number is for the National...
The National Human Trafficking Resource Center.
Okay.
And it's NHRTC .com or .org. You'll be able to find it. And they have great resources. A lot of statistics I have come right off that website. The reason why the phone call is important is because they are a statistical compilation of tips throughout America. And again, this is focusing on the U.S., so all of their stuff is U.S. related.
Good.
And so you can find out how your city's doing, how your state is doing, where the hot spots are, some of the latest legislation, because there's a lot of legislation that's coming up. It's starting to become on the horizon for state and federal legislations and people wanting to do something about it. So that's a great place to start. That's the second piece. First is believe me. The second is get that number. The third is don't be afraid to call. Because a lot of people will see this thing, and the chances are, everything I've talked about, you have probably seen it. You just didn't know what to call it. You didn't know what it was. But in your gut, you knew that something was wrong. You just knew it, but you didn't know what to do. This number gives you something to do. And if you think that somebody's in danger, immediate danger, of course dial 911. But even if you dial 911, then also call this number, because this is what begins the paper trail, if you will, for cases that may be ongoing, or one that your phone call might be one that initiates a case that becomes really powerful. It might feel like nothing happened. That doesn't mean nothing is happening. It means that they're using the resources that they have to follow up appropriately according to the information you have. And if you are going to call, they're going to ask you all kinds of questions like, where did this happen? Who were the people? What do they look like? Just like a police report, how tall were they? How many were they? How old did they look? What was their weight? All of the information about a car. Those are things to do. And again, I like to say, it's better for you to be wrong and make the phone call and be right and not.
Okay.
Because a lot of people just think, well, it's none of my business. That probably isn't it. I'm probably overreacting.
Yeah.
I'm just overreacting. But even if you call the number yourself, they will tell you, please call. Please call.
I'm going to put that in our podcast, but that is a great idea. Put this in your phone. Have it there available. You know, it's sort of like we drive down the highway, we see an accident. I mean, my wife's on the phone immediately calling and reporting it, you know.
And the last message is in terms of my organization, trying to get in business to understand that taking a stand on this is only good for your ROI. So corporate social responsibility is the right thing to do, not only because it's the right thing to do, but because also they found statistically that employees that find that they belong to a company that engages in causes like these, they have more pride and more engagement in the company. There's more trust, and we all know that hiring somebody new is a lot harder than keeping somebody, and getting employee loyalty and engagement is a driver for a company's bottom line for sure. Individuals, consumers who want to put their consumer dollars in, you know, socially conscious, you know, decisions, knowing that your business is engaging in this problem, both labor trafficking, sex trafficking, even in fair trade. We haven't even talked about that in terms of coffee and chocolate and ways you can use your consumer dollars to make slave labor an issue that's outside the U.S. We talked about the U.S., that's why.
Yeah.
When a person knows that your company is taking a stand on something, then you get customer loyalty. So there's all kinds of ways we can drive, we can make it correct, a direct, connect the dots between engaging in awareness and training your people in this particular problem and your bottom line. It's a great investment, and it's really worth the effort.
Brenda, thank you very much. This has been an emotionally charged interview here. It is not an easy topic. You've done an excellent job of making me more consciously aware and of giving me and our audience places to go. So I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. As you noted, 15 minutes is just not enough. We've barely scratched it.
No, it isn't. Well, we'll be glad to have you back again another time. But let me just say, welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio community.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Well, look, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com, and be sure to check out our archives for our other shows and other great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for interesting people to talk to, coaches, CEOs, HR professionals. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the show tonight and that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify, achieve your goals, and protect the people in our community. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug DeFeller.